Welcome to another edition of Rose City Politics, where we inform, debate, discuss, and yes, sometimes even mock municipal issues in Windsor and Essex County. Sound off during the show through our Twitter account at RCP Windsor.
All right, and welcome to another edition of Rose City Politics. My name is Doug Sartori, and I am sitting in the host chair tonight. Joining me on the show is Don Merrifield. Don, you want to give your quick introduction? What do you do?
Lately, what I've been doing is freebasing NyQuil for the last 2 weeks, so that's been fun. But I'm actually Don Merrifield, real estate agent, former candidate in the municipal election. And yeah, there you go.
And a bass player.
People tell me not to tell anybody that.
Yeah, for good reason. And tonight on the show, we have a special guest panelist, John Lidke. Welcome, John.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And you get to do your own intro, John.
Local riffraff. I own Higher Limits Cannabis Lounge. I have the Windsor Independent as well. But we are really trying to build up these days, and I'm really anticipating legalization whenever it comes.
So what we're trying to tell you, Doug, is we're both stoned over here right now.
We've been passing the vape back and forth a bit.
All right. Well, I'm drinking some cold, clear water over here, so I'll keep this ship afloat. Tonight we are talking about we're continuing our Ward Watch series. I've really enjoyed this series. I think it's a really good opportunity to talk about the entire city and different parts of the entire city, not only the politics but also some of the issues. So tonight we're going to cover Ward 7. Then in the back half of the show we are going to talk about the municipal conference daycare issue, which is very interesting. That emerged in Essex County last week with an Essex councillor and some Lakeshore politicians getting involved. To round out the show, we will touch on the shooting of a man by Windsor police. The recent incident that happened, we'll also talk about that. So I would be remiss if I did not mention that we are coming to you live from the kitchen studios at Reno's Kitchen, and it is an absolute pleasure to record in this beautiful facility, and it's kind of a homecoming for you, right, John?
Yeah, this was the old offices of the Windsor Independent, Dean Scott, and I had a lot of fun up here a while ago.
Yeah, so I think John came in and he was identifying knickknacks. That's mine. I left that over here. We're gonna try to make sure John doesn't leave with anything that he didn't come in with.
I'm walking out with two whiteboards with all of the music tracks.
As always, our friend of the show, Fraser Fathers, on his blog, Ginger Politics, has put together a companion piece, so you certainly should check out Ginger Politics if you want to see some of those details. But I'm just going to run down some of the demography of Ward 7 so that we can set the table for our discussion. Ward 7 has a population of 26,584. That is the highest population of any ward that we've looked at so far. And interestingly, it's almost 7,000 people more than Ward 3. Mm-hmm. So you're getting into it's, you know, one third to one quarter bigger than Ward 3. So you know, when I saw that, I sort of wondered if at some point we're not going to need to redistribute the wards and the ward boundaries in Windsor, and won't that be interesting? Lots of population growth. It's added almost 2,000 residents since 2011. The population density is 2,871 people per square kilometer, which is on the lower end of the scale, makes it, which is in keeping, I think, with Ward 7's character as a suburban ward. 23% of its population is under 19, which is tied for Ward 1 as the most we've seen so far. And 20% of its population is over 65. But in particular, which is kind of middle of the pack, but in particular, I think it's interesting that there's such a high population of people under 19. 1,300 single-parent families, 80% of them led by a woman. The after-tax median income in Ward 7 is $31,700. The after-tax average income is $35,904. Now, this is really interesting to me. We talked about this a little bit in the show prep, Don and John, that the Ward 7 is kind of a it's a suburban ward, and it seems to have a lot of superficial similarities to Ward 1 and 6. One thing I want to highlight here, though, is that the median income is, still high by the standards of some of the core wards, is significantly lower than Ward 1 and also lower than Ward 6. Don, you want to talk maybe a little bit about the distribution of income around Ward 7?
Well, when you look at Ward 7, like if we go to the geography of it, it starts right around Pilette and then heads east out basically to Tecumseh. So realistically, going from Pilette to Jefferson anyway, which is a pretty dense area because those are a lot of the old wartime homes back there, you're going to have not poor people, but on the scheme of things, the lower income, that's going to be the lower income part of this ward. And I think their incomes are going to be quite divergent from what you see, especially when you get out to like Rendezvous Shores and, you know, Riverside Drive. The farther you head east, the bigger the houses get. And then obviously, I mean, this whole ward really is the land of subdivisions. You know, once you get past, Jefferson, I mean, Riverside was kind of one of the original subdivisions in Windsor, getting back into the 40s and 50s. And then going, you know, you got Forest Glades part of that, and that was kind of built up in the 70s and 80s. And then obviously, you know, the population increase of 2,000 people from the last 5 years, that a lot of that's going to be in the Banwell area where, you know, the arena is and where all, you know, the Coco subdivision is out there. So, I mean, they've built hundreds, if not thousands, of houses out there. So I think it's interesting the averages kind of work out, but I think if you even narrowed it down more neighborhood by neighborhood, I think, you know, the Pilette area to Jefferson, your incomes would probably be kind of normal, quote unquote. But I think as you get the farther east you go, I think you'll get into some pretty, actually quite high income people and quite high income families living out there. Because even, you know, even the new ones they're building, the townhouses out there are now almost $400,000. So, I mean, it's a math situation. So, you know, it's interesting that it comes in a little less, but I think it's because it has a little bit more of the traditional Windsor, you know, wartime homes, which is going to kind of bring down the numbers a little bit in that area.
Okay. John, have you spent any time in Ward 7?
A little bit. I interviewed Councillor Kuzmierczyk a few months ago for The Independent, actually. We had a good conversation talking about what the problems were, what the opportunities are, and it's an interesting and really unique ward because it's really primarily residential. Apart from like the few like Wyandotte runs through it, and so you get a bit of like a BIA there, but yeah. It's really a ward without many neighborhoods whatsoever. It's just lots of homes,
yeah.
And as you were saying, a lot of them are post-war homes, and beyond that, it was the greatness of Windsor sprawl, the ability to just like fill in a vast expanse of land.
Those all kind of started early 2000s. I mean, they've been building out there since I've pretty much been in the business. So yeah, 2001, 2005, they kind of started out there, and it hasn't stopped. They're still building out there.
And so there's a big new plan development, and a lot of concerns that they have right now that they didn't have, you know, over a year and a half ago was massive flooding. We've seen these, you know, one in every 100-year floods, or as we call them now, every year.
Our twice-yearly 100-year floods.
Yeah, exactly. And so the concern that Councillor Kuzmierczyk was expressing was that, are we going to have to worry if we put in a new development, is that going to bring about more flooding? Is what kind of protections we have to do to protect not only what we have now, but the future development? So there are concerns.
Yeah, what I think is most interesting when we start to talk about the issues in Ward 7, and you touched on them a little bit, John, when we start to talk about the concern about flooding and the you know, the need to ensure that new residential developments are adaptable or adapted to a changing climate and to an increasingly wet climate in Windsor Essex. And we touched on Banwell Road already, and I think that fans of Eric Kuzmierczyk should know that there is a Banwell Road drinking game. If you're ever watching Council, every time he mentions Banwell Road, take a shot. But the,
it's a deceptive name for a drinking game. I was like, oh no, we don't drink on Banwell Road. Like no. Drink on the road, but don't drive. Is what
Well, for sure, we don't want to.
There's a
that.
Big hill over there. A lot of people drink on in the.
Allegedly. It's interesting because of all the wards that we've talked about so far, and we've talked, you know, we are going in sequential order. This is the first ward where all of the issues really relate to growth. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about issues of, you know, trying to bring back neighborhoods or issues with old housing stock or anything like that. We're talking about all the issues of growth. So in many ways, I think Ward 7 is has a lot more in common with some of the county municipalities than even Ward 1 and 6.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? For the people who have bought homes over towards the Banwell, especially if you're on the east side of Banwell, those people really, they probably more associate themselves with Tecumseh people because actually Tecumseh, quote-unquote, downtown is right there. So, you know, people living in that area generally don't really come downtown Windsor and hang out at the bars or restaurants. They actually just go to Tecumseh because it's literally four blocks away. And when I was working with a builder out there selling houses, and it was always a big issue because where we were selling houses, Tecumseh was at the fence, and that was my backyard, but the other backyard. So, and people didn't really know the border. From a taxpayer standpoint, you wanted to be on the other side of the fence because your taxes could be over $1,000 difference for the same house. But that whole area really, and that probably equates to the income levels too, is they really kind of think of themselves as Tecumsehans more than Windsorites.
That's really interesting. And so I would really like to go down that line of questioning with Councillor Kuzmierczyk. It must be difficult to engage residents who think of themselves more in line with the town of Tecumseh and maybe see the town of Tecumseh as the center that they would naturally, you know, gravitate towards because it's closer. It must be difficult to interest them in or engage them on issues of Windsor as a whole.
Yeah, because why would they care about Windsor downtown? I mean, you know, hopefully they do, but the reality of it, they never go down there. To them, downtown is Tecumseh.
Yeah, their amenities are located closer to them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, because geographically, it's, you know, relatively far from downtown. I mean, and Windsor's small, so I mean, it's not. But, you know, if you're going to go out to a restaurant or just, even if you're just going shopping or, you know, your bank is there, whatever the case may be, you got Manning and Lesperance, which is literally four blocks away. You're never going to go downtown. So yeah, I think that's a good point that you bring up because I bet you Eric, in going around and talking to our Councillor Kuzmierczyk, as he goes around and talks to residents, they just don't probably give a rat's ass about what the problems are downtown.
Well, it must be difficult, and it's interesting when you think about the way that our council is aligned. And I one of the things that I really like about this ward series that we're doing is that we get to break down some of those assumptions, you know. And I think one of the assumptions that people have is that suburban wards like wards 1 and 6 are going to breed more conservative politicians. They are going to have less of an interest in what's happening in the city center and maybe some of the core wards. And that we're always going to have a struggle between the center and the periphery. But I think Councillor Kuzmierczyk shows a different path. He certainly is interested and deeply interested in the concerns of his ward, hence the drinking game, you know, the concerns of growth, parkland, residential development, flooding. These are all suburban issues. These are all issues that properly belong to that ward. But at the same time, he is not part of the governing group of six, and maybe that's partly just because you want the smallest, you know, looking at it from the side of the mayor and his typical supporters on council, you want the smallest possible majority that you can have so that the spoils of victory can be divided as narrowly as possible, right? You don't want necessarily a really big coalition, but Councillor Kuzmierczyk clearly sits outside that coalition and very often votes on issues with councillors Mara, Bordelon, and Holt. And it's when you think about it in terms of geography, maybe that's a less likely group to at least sometimes find common ground than one might expect.
You know, you look to his voting record And he, I asked him about this. I asked all the counselors, well, the four that will sit down with me. I asked them about the 6-4 divide, and he, much like the other two, two who responded the same way, said, no, there is no real 6-4 divide. But you look at the votes, and I think it's clear to anyone who sees it, like the vast majority of the contentious issues, and those are the ones that it really comes down to. But he's more ideologically aligned, clearly, with Counselors Holt, Amara, and Bordelon. He's younger. He was partisan of a stripe, right? So he holds those attitudes. But what I also really like about him is his commitment to transparency and integrity. Like, and that was a huge thing. Like, he posts his votes online. He explains why he makes his votes the way that he does, and that really puts him apart from any other counselor, quite frankly.
I think you're right, and I really think that's one of the things about, and I like a lot of things about the way Councillor Kaczmarczyk conducts himself, but one of the things I think that should be an example to his colleagues and to politicians really at all levels in our region is his open communication with the public. I can't think of another local politician who communicates not just frequently but also in a formal way. There's a formal sort of, there's a blog, it has a record. He talks about the way he votes. It's not informal. You know, I know Councillor Bordelon is very communicative on social media, as is Councillor Holt, but it's more piecemeal. Mm-hmm. They don't have a structured means of communication. You know, when people who live in Ward 7 are thinking about who they're going to vote for this fall, should Councillor Kaczmarczyk decide to run for re-election, they have an opportunity to look at his where he stood on every single vote of importance going back to when he was first elected in the by-election.
I think that's just, it's such a great thing to have done, and it's going to set him apart so much. And he ran on that. That was one of the first things that he said in the by-election campaign, was that he wanted to do this. He believed that recorded votes were necessary. And, you know, kudos to him for following through and for setting this the bar. But I believe that it demonstrates that we need to have a bylaw that just enshrines this as mandatory. We need to have running vote records, that we need to have explanations, and we should need to make this enshrined, and councillors should be doing this not on their own prerogative, but because, quite frankly, it's your job.
So I think that's interesting, and I want to just go down that road just for a minute before we get back to Ward 7, because I do think that's a really interesting point you raised, John. I think that the business of council should be much more transparent. I would like to see the recorded votes published in a format where that data can be analyzed. Mm-hmm. Even a spreadsheet of all the recorded votes in each week would be a wonderful addition. But I'm not sure that I would want to mandate any particular formal or informal communication between councillors and their constituents. Even the ward meetings, I think, are sort of unofficial. I don't know that a councillor's presence is required, although it would be extremely politically dangerous not to attend. I'm just not sure that it's a good idea to add a whole lot of you know, formal requirements for that type of thing to a counselor's job.
Well, there are a few counselors who should probably not talk so much on social media who they try it, but they fail miserably at it. And it's interesting what John said about, you know, Eric, that he campaigned on something and did it, because from what I understood, when it comes to politics, campaigning is campaigning, but governing is a whole completely different thing. I didn't know they were correlated at all.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. It's
the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It depends on your personal character, I suppose.
I guess, yeah.
But just to cap that off just really quickly on the idea of whether or not it should be mandated, sure, I come off a little hot about, like, you should be doing this right now because it's your job. But, you know, that's just a reaction to the current climate that we have.
To the lack of transparency.
Exactly. We have councillors, the majority of council voted against requiring councillors to explain what they did and learned at a conference. What's the need for the secrecy? And I think a lot of people in the city, I don't like claiming there's a lot of conspiracy theories going on, but just, you know, there's such little transparency.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody in the last election, including the mayor, campaigned on, okay, we were kidding before, but now we're going to be really transparent. And it's actually, in my opinion, gotten worse.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so since you brought up, I think it's a really bad look for the councillor who spent the most on travel to have not voted in favor of requiring reports from counselors who attend conferences. I think that's kind of a bad look.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get to the fun stuff and talk about the elections and my favorite part of these Ward Watch segments, which is the path to victory for a challenger, that's always fun to talk about. I want to talk about the an issue in Ward 7 around, which is, I think, really is emblematic of the kind of troubles that we have in communities that are growing and the kind of controversies that we have. And that is the issue of the Eagles. Oh, and speaking of Eagles, yeah. Soaring into the studio right now.
Quietly walking up the stairs, Kieran, like a drunk sailor.
Kieran McKenzie. Can we plug in Kieran's microphone?
Yeah, hang on one second. I unplugged here. There we go.
Oh, that sounded good. That's for the perfect. Folks at home.
That's right.
How's it going, Kieran?
Well, you know, small price to pay. I am here now. I'm sorry I'm late. I was at the Cannabis is Icky annual general membership meeting. So, sorry, John.
It's okay. Yeah. Well, now with you here, though, I can leave. Good to see you. Cheers, Brian.
Welcome, Kieran.
Cannabis is wonderful, by the way. Let's proceed from there.
Okay. Are we looking for clips to save for October there?
I was hoping we'd get a discount if we said it enough. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. John, you're holding the paper. Would you mind, and I'm talking about a sheet of paper. Would you mind setting up the issue for us of the Eagles?
Well, Gail, I'll read off the first couple paragraphs and you can go from there.
Sure. That's a Peter Langill piece, right?
Yeah, so Ministry keeps eye on bald eagles in East Windsor. Peter Langill put it out March 16th. The Ministry of Natural Resources is well aware of the development taking place in East Windsor and its proximity to a bald eagle nest. Work has begun on the new development between Little River Road and Riverside Drive west of Bellagio. A number of residents and birders have expressed concern that construction equipment is too close to the hedgerow where the nest is located. But don't worry, because senior media relations officer Jolanta Kowalski says the ministry is monitoring the situation.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. So there is a...
she's monitoring it. It's good.
She's got a pair of binoculars and she's watching it. This feel, I don't know. I like it. This feels like real, like, hey, small town news segment.
There's a grassroots organization called Save the Eagles that is apparently working to make sure that this habitat is preserved. So I want to start on this issue with Kieran, since he hasn't had a chance to speak too much tonight.
Okay.
Kieran, where do you stand on eagles? Do you want them to live or die?
Pro or against?
You know, okay.
The line's
bad
drawn.
Setup there. So I would love to preserve the habitat, number one. Windsor is actually a... Windsor-Essex County is well recognized as a birding destination. So this is certainly something that... from a public policy standpoint and a community interest, I think there's interest in trying to preserve that habitat as best we can. There's a certain amount of, I feel, a certain amount of disingenuousness coming from the community group itself, who, in fact, it's my understanding, part of the development that a lot of people currently reside, actually destroyed a bunch of the habitat that they're now trying to protect to where those birds have been migrated. So, with that said, it's still a laudable goal. And Windsor does need to do a better job in terms of preserving its green space, period. So taking the habitat for this particular species out of removing it from the discussion just specifically, we don't do a good enough job maintaining these spaces, preserving these spaces. And if in doing so we can maintain this habitat for this particular species, that's kind of cool and people want to come and see anyways. I think it's worth preserving and something that we should put our efforts behind.
Don, eagles, life or death?
Kill the eagles. I guess to kind of key on Kieran's point, which is why I was kind of smirking over here the whole time. If you read the Windsor Star article on this story, the lady, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. She actually lives on...
It's probably for the best.
Yeah, really. It's probably because the lawsuit will be easier. She actually lives on Bellagio. Now, again, I'm in real estate. I sold houses out there. Before that was the biggest subdivision in Windsor, there was a lot of trees out there. They plowed all that crap over because, for some reason, in Windsor-Essex County, we can't build a subdivision and have one tree left within 5,000 acres of it, unlike any other place in the world. But that's another topic for discussion. So... You know, it's
mandatory trees in new subdivision bills done. Yeah,
they should.
Sounds like a municipal issue.
But I don't know. It's I agree 100%. Windsor's an environmental wasteland. We all know that. I wish there was a hell of a lot more trees and green space around here. I wish there was a lot more environment around here. But the reality is, if you're going to start a campaign to save an ecologically important area for a very important animal, the bald eagle, you should probably not. This is almost like campaigning is campaigning and governing is governing. Is you don't, you maybe not living in the subdivision that actually destroyed its original habitat and then saying, well, because now I can see it from my backyard, I think we should save it. It's, you know, it's kind of ridiculous, to be honest.
Okay. So the challenge for you, John, is now be the first person to comment on saving the eagles without giggling.
I already laughed. I'm sorry. So do I get to answer the question, though?
Yes, please.
The eagles live or die? Well, I think regular listeners of the show, when I come in, would know that I'm a man of the birds. I'm not going to...
You are a man of the birds.
I'm not going to let the birds die. And plus, bird law is very complicated, so I don't think we can allow for them to just get killed. But this is the challenge of like any type of growth in a community, is balancing off the needs of what the people want and the marketplace wants versus, you know, the environment what the eagles want.
The eagles want to go back to Bellagio.
That's right.
I don't know. Like Hotel California jokes in there. There's a bunch. Sorry.
So does anyone know, I don't know the ecology behind bald eagles in the region. Like, are they native to here, like, in bountiful numbers?
No, there's not a lot of them. Actually, I had commented on this earlier. A friend of mine, when I was growing up, his father's a photographer. And he's been going out to that area taking pictures of these eagles since, you know, I was a teenager, which is like 87 years ago. So they've always been there. And I guess that's where, again, the hypocrisy of all this comes from. We destroyed pretty much 99% of their environment to build all these houses. And now we're trying to save the 1%. So I don't know if they're plentiful here, but I know they've always been there. And, you know, it's a cool animal to keep because obviously they need really high trees. So they're not going to grow on your 6-foot, you know, pine tree out front or nest in there. So they do need a certain type of environment. And then, you know, obviously it's very important we save this kind of stuff, but it's, you know, the group that's doing it is ridiculous.
So I want to go back to something that Kieran mentioned, because I think it's, really troubling and really unfortunate that our environmental policy in this region is so fragmented. And that whenever we want to do something other than bulldoze whatever and build whatever else, we have to really sort of build out of whole cloth. We have to build an environmental movement to take on a developer. And it kind of comes down to the political climate of the moment and how well that group executes and whatever. It seems to me that developing a coherent policy across Windsor and Essex County for the preservation of green space and for the preservation of species at risk beyond the bare minimum, because I think something interesting from that piece that didn't get mentioned yet is that the only requirement is that construction not disturb the eagle's nest directly. So you could literally drive a forklift past the eagle's nest like 2 inches away, and as long as you don't touch that eagle's nest, you're within the rules. And that's probably not good enough if we actually want these animals to survive and thrive in our region. But it concerns me that that this is the way these things roll out. So if the Save the Eagles folks are successful in sort of stopping the encroachment of new development onto the habitat of these animals, then it's going to be the private developer who owns that land who's going to be left holding the bag. So is it good public policy for every developer who wants to build a new subdivision to point the environmental gun at their head, spin the barrel, and pull the trigger, and hope that they're not the one who ends up, you know, with their metaphorical brains blasted all over the place?
So just on that, there could be legal exposure, by the way, if suddenly the city decides to take the, you know, if the city were to decide, and I know this, I would be willing to guess or to just even opine, this particular council wouldn't pull the rug out from under a developer if they'd already zoned the area for a residential or commercial development, that they wouldn't suddenly have a quote unquote come to Jesus moment and say, we're going to save the eagles. And, you know, but there are some creative solutions that could be out there. There's land swaps. Let's be Windsor has a lot of infill opportunities. I'm not talking about sprawl. I'm talking specifically about infill. There's plenty. And you could you could make a very sweet deal available to the right to a developer to convince that person or that organization that maybe this area, we want to preserve it because it has these, it's significant ecologically from this particular standpoint. And again, I'm going to go back to Windsor being a birding region. There's an ecotourism piece here that you know, I think is vastly under leveraged in this community. We have some very unique flora and fauna in Windsor and Essex County. People already come here, and we don't do nearly enough, in my opinion, for all of the work. And I know TWEPI does do some marketing about of our region in the envirotourism space, but it's not enough. It's not enough. We have some of the rarest of a lot of things here in Windsor and Essex County. If more people knew about that, they'd be coming. There'd be more people coming. This is another feature of that. And I think if the city were to be, has an opportunity to recognize that and work with the various community partners, including the developers who are in play here, to try to leverage that and also look at a potential other infill opportunity.
Well, you know, actually one habitat for these eagles is Pesh Island. So I think we have to congratulate the mayor now that he's going to be a captain of that steamship going across there. So if you want to see the eagles, hop on the new boat going over to Pesh Island.
I think it's Steamboat Stilkins.
Well, there was a previous council who actually acquired that land for us, though. Those are the folks that really actually deserve the credit for that.
So I really think it's interesting, the point you bring up, Kieran, and I think it's a great idea to, it's always a great idea to try to solve, make a deal that solves two problems at once, and the idea of encouraging infill in some of the areas of Windsor that could use it is, I think, a really good and potentially creative solution. We need to go to break. Mm-hmm. I think we've got lots to chew on still in Ward 7. We haven't even really touched on the politics yet, so we'll come back with that. Kieran and everyone else on the panel, I want you guys to think about this. As we break, and maybe we can come back and this will be what we talk about. Ward 7 has elected Eric Kuzmierczyk. It's a suburban ward. Wards 1 and Ward 6 have elected folks. I think you've got to call them conservative fiscal warriors. And Ward 7, which superficially looks a lot like Wards 1 and 6, has elected someone who would fall, I think, on the progressive side of the ledger. And so I think it's an interesting setup to the discussion to kind of think about the reasons why and maybe wonder why the people representing those wards present such a different look on council.
I think they call those limousine liberals. Is that what they're called?
Oh, man. And it's one of those times
that was Don Merrifield, yeah, everybody. It is.
Yeah, that's somebody whose volume's getting turned down at the break. We'll be right back.
Welcome to this week's Rose City Politics events calendar. Thursday, March 29th, the 11th annual Warden Luncheon featuring Essex County Warden Tom Bain is at the Chicharro Club. Windsor Spitfires go up against the Sarnia Sting. Friday, March 30th, Fight Like Mason Blood Drive is at the Windsor Blood Donor Clinic. Easter Egg Hunt for Dogs and Their Families is at Malden Park. The 1979 film Legend of the Mountain is playing at the Detroit Film Theater. Saturday, March 31st, Yoga in the Gallery is at the Art Gallery of Windsor. Raven Love in the 27s from Detroit with Gas Station Mentality from Montreal play Fog. Tuesday, April 3rd, Game of Thrones Trivia Night at Manchester Pub. The next regular City Council meeting is Monday, April 9th. Check out Rose City Politics on Facebook and Twitter. Subscribe to premium content on Patreon. If you'd like your event featured here, please contact us through social media.
And welcome back to Rose City Politics. Just to reset the panel, Doug Sartori here running the board. All the millennials are missing tonight.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm
sorry. Whoa.
Shut up, old man. Go on.
Oh, brother. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
John's young.
I forgot. John, you're under 40, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 29.
So he's like full blown. Well, if you believe that, but I mean,
I don't put it on a sign and Snapchat it.
What's this Snapchat you speak of?
Okay, we got John Lidke as our guest panelist, and we're definitely inviting you back. It's been a lot of fun.
The sign in front of me actually says resident millennial. So. Yeah.
Token
millennial, sorry.
That's Sarah's name.
Don Merrifield is here, bringing his usual wit and wisdom, as well as Kieran McKenzie. So we left off before the break with a question, and the question that I posed to you folks was, why has Ward 7 elected a progressive councillor, relatively progressive councillor, when demographically similar Wards 1 and 6 have elected, relatively speaking, conservative councillors? Let's start with Kieran.
Okay, so number one, I'm not buying full-blown the relatively similar demographics just because Forest Glade is its own unique entity unto itself. But I want to back up for a second. Eric Kuzmierczak, and I hope he's listening. I really do hope he's listening, because there is a debt of gratitude that the current councillor for Ward 7 owes city politics. And in fact, I think a tremendous debt of gratitude. I'm going to go back to 2000 and, oh my goodness, it was probably 2012 or 2013.
13, I think, yeah.
This is when we had the by-election for Dwight Duncan's seat in Windsor-Tecumseh, and who decided to run for that seat? It was Percy Hatfield, the current councillor at that time for the ward in question, that vacated that seat, triggering a by-election. Or no, sorry. Triggering a decision. a decision
yep.
For council, as you remember. And let's remember what that initial decision was. The initial decision was that council was going to appoint someone of their choosing.
Democracy is expensive, and we should try to save dollars when we can.
Ooh. Even though we were about 14 months away from the election.
Yeah. It was obscene. Right?
So there was a public outcry, and I'm going to toot our own horn. There was a number of people who were involved in this and who objected to it. I think it's fair to say that Rose City Politics, and one of the most vocal opponents were myself, Paul Sinnott, and Reno Bordelon. In fact, who were very offended by the notion that council would take it upon themselves to appoint somebody to a position, especially when literally there was about $1 billion of spending that was going to be voted on over the next term. Council voted that they were going to appoint somebody. They hadn't appointed that person yet. There was some discussion that it would be Angelo Marignani, who finished second in the council race in the previous election to Percy Hatfield. There was some discussion that it might even be and by the way, who managed Angelo Marignani's campaign, his losing campaign in the 2010 election, was Paul Sinnott, who was actively campaigning against an appointment. So there's some history there that is directly connected to Rose City Politics. Council eventually, they made the decision. There was a ton of public outcry, and 2 weeks later, the very next council meeting, there was a motion to reconsider that passed, and you need to pass that with a 2/3 majority to even entertain the motion that you're going to reconsider, or to entertain the idea that you're going to reconsider something that was previously passed. And then they had to introduce another motion to essentially proceed with the by-election. And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And I don't think council's reversed itself in that way since that particular moment.
And if Eric wants to solve two problems with one, he owes us a debt of gratitude.
Yeah.
And he's got this eagle situation. So when you kill all the eagles, if you could stuff them and give them to us as presents, that would be very great, nice of you.
We will also accept gifts of eagle meat.
Okay. So now going to your question, I don't want to monopolize too much of the discussion, but I will answer your question.
Eagle meat.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It's like a drumstick. Okay.
I just want to say there's a certain amount of symbolism, the amount of like talking about eagle death and like with what's going on across the border in America.
Oh
like,
my God.
I don't know if it's related at all, but.
6 and 7. Kind of similar, but again, I just go back to Forest Glade. I think that is such a unique subdivision, and it's a huge subdivision in Windsor. It has a unique characteristics in many different respects, and I think that whole strip, so you have that part of it, and then you have this other huge subdivision that's basically fully constructed. I don't even know what to call it. Just on the opposite side, you know, going just past the WFCU Center. Mm-hmm. What are all those new homes in there? I don't know what you call them, Don.
We just refer to it as Banwell. But
yeah, sure. So let's call it the Banwell subdivision before until we can come up with
Blue Heron something.
Sure. The Blue Heron. That's yeah. Exactly what it is, because there's a few businesses that are called that. Anyway, the point being, those are pretty high-end homes, and you mm-hmm. know, relative to Windsor, and it's a whole bunch of them, a lot of them in a big and tight space. So that has changed the dynamic in that in Ward 7, probably bringing it more in line with what we think of as traditionally Ward 6. But the character, when I think Ward 7, I think of Little River Golf Course, I think of Forest Glade. And I think that that's kind of fundamentally different than the way I think of Ward 6, which I think of as that's Riverside.
I also, I find the question like a little bit odd, because you're leaving out the premise of like who the candidates were. Mm-hmm. Like, so you're talking about, like, in contrast to the other two wards that, which look like they would be conservative, but, like, I don't see a conservative candidate that ran, like, on that list. I mean, we can talk about Angelo being, like, he's, I would say, probably fiscally conservative to a certain extent, small business owner, understands, like, how mm-hmm. to run books, but he's a pretty progressive guy. He wants heavy investment in the downtown core, he wants investment in the arts, but I'm sure that you can speak to the other of that.
Well, so first of all, if Mr. Mariani is listening right now, we're going to engage in a little bit of fiction. And we're going to imagine an alternate universe where a person very much like Angelo won, but it's not him.
We're talking about my fantasy counselor.
Would this mythical person be more likely to vote with the mayor, the current mayor, or more likely to vote not consistently with the current mayor?
I think if the candidate was a little bit older, and he or she probably would have been a little bit more on the conservative side and kind of fell in line a little bit more with Drew and the gang.
Yeah, I do think you're right, and partly the question is posed to tease out some of these differences, because one of the things that that at least the way that I tend to look at this stuff, from 10,000 feet away. I tend to look at the numbers and not think, especially in neighborhoods that I don't visit a whole lot, like the East End of Windsor. Those questions are worth asking, and we can tease out those differences. But I think, there's truth in what Kieran has to say, that wards are artificial. Wards aren't organic. We touched on this last week, and just because you're inside the boundaries of a ward doesn't mean that you have a community of interest. And the folks at the north end of Ward 7 probably have a lot more in common with the folks who live in the north end of Ward 6 than they do with the folks who live in Forest Glade. But really importantly, to your point, John,
south end of Ward 6, I think you wanted to say. What I think you might want to say.
So
like the Riverside Drive.
Yeah, Riverside, that's what I'm thinking.
That's north.
The Riverside piece. So, but the candidate really matters. You know, the folks who are on offer, the people who are on the ballot, are going to determine the nature of the race and what gets elected. But you would think, were Ward 7 to be like Wards 1 and 6, you would see more conservative candidates.
And I do agree. I agree with you with that.
Well, I think to go to John's point, when actually using Angelo as the second candidate, if Angelo is just a Ward 7 resident and isn't a business owner in downtown Windsor, I think his perspective is going to be very different politically about what he's concerned about.
Yeah, but Angelo was kind of like, he was always going to be a downtown guy.
No,
you
he
know
was.
What I mean, yeah, like that's like.
But if we're going by Doug's mythical candidate, if you have an Angelo who lives out there and is his age and kind of his mm-hmm. income bracket,
right.
and isn't a business owner downtown, mm-hmm. I think you get more of the Drew 6 dynamic going on with that candidate.
I do really like the idea that you brought up, though, Kieran, with
don't encourage him, John.
Well, just in regards to with Councillor Kuzmarczyk being able to actually have run and won the seat rather than the appointment, because think of what that would have been, how politics would have looked if council just appointed someone. It's a, I don't want to call it a placeholder seat, but that's kind of what it would have been. You would presume that they would have voted in favor of the people who put them in position, and then that could be.
Well, it's such an
they were getting
the
ready.
Election,
they were getting
right?
ready to appoint either Angelo Mariani or Tom Wilson. That's who it was likely to be, one of the two. And Tom Wilson ran in the by-election.
So this is
by the way, and lost.
miserably.
Lost. Yeah. He was well behind.
So this is something that happens more frequently at the school board level, because the school board is not really set up to run their own elections. So if someone resigns, they pretty much are stuck appointing. They're not going to stand up the infrastructure or pay an invoice to the city to run a one-off election for them. So they do appoint. And when they appoint, they typically appoint somebody who is not planning to run in the following election, because it's such an unfair advantage. And, you know, similarly to interim party leaders at the federal and provincial level, it's just not playing a clean pool.
It's grimy.
Yeah, to appoint someone who's going to run in that election. But it doesn't sound like council was considering that at all.
No, and if this ever comes up again, I'm never planning on running for anything, so I'm more than happy to be appointed to any position.
I, too, will take an appointment just for the shits of it.
You know, I attended, as like I just mentioned, I was at both. I was involved in the campaign, and I attended both council meetings, and I spoke at both council meetings. And I'll just say this. Mayor Francis was not happy about this.
No.
He was incredibly angry. And in fact, even and I'll remember this for a long time.
That's why he's hated us for a long time.
I will remember this for a long time. He had some very stern words, because he knew it was going to happen. And in fact, in my view, he kind of read the tea leaves in terms of the way the community was going on this issue of the by-election or appointment, recognized, you know what, I really can't justify the idea of appointing somebody, especially as he was first elected as a councillor in a by-election himself, which both times that I went to council to speak to this, I made that point.
So there's something, I just can't let this stand. Yeah. Don mentioned that Rose City politics is hated by former Mayor Francis. I just want to say that I treasure my Christmas cards former Mayor Francis, and I'm not going to let your,
lack of getting a Christmas card.
I'm not going to be tainted exactly right.
That's true. Yeah.
So, just looking at the electoral situation in Ward 7, turnout is consistently high across the ward. 33% is the lowest at the far south end of the ward, and turnout is highest in polls 1 and 4. In 2014. Councillor Kuzmarczyk pretty much walked away with it. He got over 50% of the vote. And what is interesting, so he got, 50.76% of the vote. Coming in second was Angelo Marignani, who we've mentioned, at 34.27. Angelo won poll 2, Riverside Sportsman's Club, and came extremely close, came within about 7 votes of winning poll 1. Which is Lily Cazilli's, and beyond that, he was not really in contention. So those are the electoral results.
It's interesting. I don't mean to interrupt, but we don't have the by-election results here. But it was extremely close. It was a matter of hundreds.
It was less than 20 votes.
Yeah, it was very close.
It was very close. And in fact, I was there when they were posting. I was wherever the it was at the WFCU Center, and they were posting the results. Everybody was waiting to the last poll results to come in before you could call it. And it was extremely close. It really could have gone either way. And I believe to this day, had it gone the other way, that you might be looking at Councillor Marignani in Ward 7 right now, rather than Councillor Kuzmarczyk, just because of the Windsor's predisposition to re-elect incumbents.
The incumbency bump.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assumption to make. So let's ask this question. Does anybody here think that Councillor Kuzmarczyk his seat is at risk in 2018?
If he kills one of them eagles, he's going to have a hard time getting re-elected.
If we don't get our share of eagle pemmican, there's going to be trouble. But does anybody think that Councillor Kuzmarczyk is in danger?
I don't think he's in danger. I think he's pretty well served by all income bracket. Like, I think it's a very diverse community out there, and everybody likes him. I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him, aside from, you know, the mayor and the other people when they're mad when he doesn't vote with them. So,
but that actually helps him too, to some extent.
I think he's pretty much a shoo-in.
You need a really high profile candidate, I think, at this point to even try to mount a bid against him. I don't think you see Mr. Marignani try to do anything at this point.
I don't think you can beat Councillor Kuzmarczyk from the left. Right, and that's where most people would perceive Angelo Marignani, for, you know, to your point, John,
coming from, you know, fiscal conservative, sure, with the entrepreneurial background and small business and all of that. That said, I think he's mostly kind of identified as being somebody who is progressive minded.
He owned an absinthe bar, for God's sake.
You know, another thing you have to factor in is that whole subdivision out there, which is going to be a huge voting block, the Banwell area. The housing prices out there and the new homes being built out there are a lot more expensive than they were. We're talking $300,000-$400,000, and you're getting a lot of older people moving
this
there.
This is where I'm going.
The dynamic can change out there.
He's vulnerable to a credible challenger on the right, in my view. And if you know, so could is he likely to be reelected? Yeah. Exceedingly so. Yes. What is the profile of the candidate that could beat him? In my view, it's somebody who wants to play the fiscal conservative card in a very hard way. I'm going to keep your taxes low. I'm going to make sure that, and in fact, I know he's been very active on the Banwell Road improvements. Those haven't happened, but you can leverage those as something he may not have been able to accomplish over his term. I'm going to get Banwell Road fixed. I'm going to make sure that your taxes stay low. And you're going to be able to live in your great big McMansion and live happily ever after. That kind of campaign can sell in that ward.
And somebody, a candidate like that, can also pull the old, you know what, he's anti-Drew and he's not playing ball. Someone like me, who's more conservative, will get more from Drew because he's had the problem with the
enhanced capital. Disagree with that. Yeah. There's the vulnerability of being the 4 of the 7-4, yeah, right?
For sure.
Sure. You know what? I think in an environment where... I think in an environment where that dynamic had been more deftly handled by the mayor, that would be more of a real concern. I think it's only a theoretical concern at this point. The only thing I want to add, I think it's an excellent analysis that you guys have put together. The only thing I'd like to add to that is to say that I think your interest level as a potential candidate in Ward 7, because you got to think that it's a tough road to hoe in 2018. Your interest level in running and doing all that work has to be at least partially based on what you think Councillor Kuzmierczyk's interest in a spot in senior government
is. Sure, 100%.
Whether you think that he might have intention to go somewhere in 2019, 2022, 2023. And I think at that point, if you are someone who's looking at a council, at potentially sitting on council with a 5 to 10 year horizon, then perhaps Ward 7 is something that's worth looking at.
Minimum 2 election strategy. I agree with that 100%.
It would be hilarious though if we get this grainy photo of Eric dressed up like Elmer Fudd, just shooting eagles right out of the tree late at night. He has this weird obsession with killing stuff that we don't know about. That would be awesome.
Again,
that's totally Don Merrifield's fantasy world. So let's just be clear.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't. We have a few minutes left. I don't think, you know what, the tone of this show is probably not.
Let's skip the police shooting.
Yeah, it's not a good show.
Let's make fun of Lakeshore.
Yeah.
Can I make one more point about Eric Kuzmierczyk before we move on?
Sure.
So one thing, and one of the things that I think speaks to how much we think he has a tremendous opportunity to be reelected is to his approach to being an elected official. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's one of the models that people, whatever your political stripe is and your predispositions, this is a guy who, in my view, lives accountability and transparency in a very, very meaningful way.
If you'd got here on time, we already discussed all this. But, you know, it's cool.
I told you where I was.
It's cool you just show up and just start talking about
stuff.
Well,
anyway, so I just want to, I will offer my voice as additional kudos. Mm-hmm. The guy is very transparent with the people that he represents. I think it's the exact way that you're supposed to represent. Not only does he do, you know, the online thing where he's got his website and he tells you what he voted on and why he voted a certain way. He'll talk about at length when there's an issue that he's struggling with, mm-hmm. where he will spend the time and in the middle, mid-mandate, go door to door and knock on 100 doors and ask people about what they think about issue X, Y, or Z, whatever it might be. And that becomes a very a significant part. If you can take, and I do, I believe he's fully sincere when he's you know, in the council chamber and making those comments, that I consulted my constituents, I knocked on these doors, and this was the feedback that I got, and this is how I've applied that feedback to the decision that I'm making. He's doing it right. And you may quibble with the decisions that he's made and some of the ways that he's done his own advocacy or whatnot. But in terms of the transparency that he brings to being an elected official and his commitment to that, he is one of the people in the community, bar none, at any level of government, that people should seek to emulate.
He definitely takes his commitment as an elected official and his responsibility as an elected official and as a representative of the residents of Ward 7 extremely seriously. And I think that's one of the most attractive things about Councillor Kuzmierczyk as a politician, is how hard not only does he want to be seen to be doing things the right way in terms of consultation and transparency, but I believe that those are core values for him. And I wish that no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, I wish that more of our politicians felt that that was important.
And just last point on that is whether or not he actually believes in those values, he preaches them, right? So even if he's doing it cynically, just to look at it just from complete devil's point of view, who cares? Because you're still getting an amazing representative out of it.
Well, this is the flip side, and I want to carefully state
John's
that
dark
this is
picture of humanity.
well, everyone's evil.
It's the flip side of the argument that if you consistently act like a racist, you're just a racist.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's 100%.
There's we can't see into the hearts and minds of others, so all we can go on is behavior and people's conduct. And if your conduct is consistent, then right, we can subscribe to John's dark and twisted view.
Well, that
of
was that was my point, Councillor Eric Eagle Hunter. We don't know that about. Right?
You can only judge a man by how many eagles he's actually killed.
Okay, go to Lakeshore.
Okay. Let's fly over to Lakeshore.
It's a quick eagle's flight away from Ward 7. Okay, so very quickly. The town of Lakeshore is not supporting a motion from neighboring Essex pushing for user pay daycare at municipal conferences. This comes to us as a report from AM800, March 21st. Harrow area councillor, Essex councillor Sherry Bondi, had her motion passed by council, calling for pay-for-use daycare services to be made available at major municipal conferences. I assume she's talking about things like AMO. Bondi suggests the plan is a way of reducing barriers to politics for parents with young children. Unfortunately, Lakeshore had a 4-4 vote, which of course means that the motion was defeated. And Mayor Tom Bain voted against the motion, adding he understands the stresses of being a parent and politician. He's done it for years. I'm going to turn this over to the panel with the quote. In some instances, I brought my wife and brought the children, and my wife looked after them. And in other instances, they were left with grandparents or aunts and uncles. Finger on the pulse. Okay, John.
You know, as the token millennial right here, I'll play the role and play into it really hard. Like, I'm outraged that he would speak from such a privileged position. Quite frankly, like, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. It's great that he had a wife. I love that. It's great that there were grandparents that could take after his kids. But not everybody is in that position. Not everyone has that support system. And to completely disregard that point of view, especially when you have, like, a female counselor who brings it forward, like, who's talking about this from an actual perspective, that it blows me away. And it really, old white men.
I guess we should just go ahead and diss
it. Just say that. Yeah. Like, okay, pardon me. Well, you know, we should. There's just explicit language, and this, yeah, you can tell how much this really pisses me off. So sorry to interrupt you.
It's
there. Okay. I'll let you finish your thought.
Well, just a little joke there, but yeah, we should just definitely go ahead and disenfranchise single parents.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well no, in counselor, is it Councillor Bain? I don't know what he is.
Warden.
Warden.
Warden. Warden. Warden.
Of course he's a warden.
It's like Boss Hogg or something like that.
He probably could have just suggested when they go to these meetings that she just watch the kids and appoint her husband to do all the work for her, because obviously that's the way he thinks. My quick 2 seconds on this. If you actually think like that and you're an elected official, just don't be an idiot and quit.
Just
get
stop.
Your time has come by. You're not relevant anymore. Stop being a politician, because you shouldn't be making decisions for anybody, and obviously not even your wife.
And so obviously I'm piggybacking on this. First of all, Councillor Bondi came forward with a very reasonable proposal. And all it is for the County of Essex to propose to the FC, you know, these organizations that you may want to consider doing this moving forward and doing it on a pay for service model. So she's not, well, maybe that would have been funded, who knows. But the point being is it's a position A that I think she found a reasonable spot, a very reasonable spot, and was thinking about a way in order to be able to bring this motion forward in a way that anybody or and everybody can support it. And then it does. It comes down to this idea of whether or not you want to make the commitment of public office holding something that is available, not even attractive, available to young people. It's very, very hard. The idea, childcare is expensive and it's challenging. It's always challenging. And especially if it's off hours on the weekends, evenings, all of that stuff, it actually is a nightmare and you have to rely on friends. I'm speaking as a dad now, friends, family, anyone else who can, who you want to A, trust with your children and B, and can be available to do that. It's very challenging to find the appropriate things and to be able to engage in the various things in your life professionally or personally that you would otherwise want to, that could be enriching to you on your career path and also enriching to you and your family in other ways. For Tom Bain, and Tom Bain served this community for many decades, and I thank him for his service, but I agree with you, Don, it's time for him to walk away, because if he can't get why it's important to provide childcare services at conferences, then he just doesn't get it, period. He should walk away. Well, it's terrible.
What he said is people in our position should only be old white men.
That's maybe even landowning.
By implication, yeah. Okay, so you guys all dunked on Bain. I'm going to read this quote from Linda McKinley so I have somebody fresh to dunk on. So Lakeshore Councillor Linda McKinley isn't sold on the need for user-pay daycare at municipal conferences. Quote, well, respectfully, having spent 29 years in municipal politics, not having a lot of money, just being that working woman all along, if it is important enough to you, you find a way, your children are cared for, and you go and take care of business at these conferences.
Or you don't go, though, right?
Well, exactly. And that's the point I wanted to make, that to me echoes so many arguments that you hear about if it's possible to succeed, you know, if one person pulled themselves up by their bootstraps from the gutter, then that means that everything is fine and we don't have to worry about how things are structured and how things are set up. And I just think that's garbage. If we are structuring things so that it takes a superhuman effort and you have to struggle to find a way to do something that is relatively easy to all of your peers. And now we're not talking about making the job easier. We're not talking about spotting folks a few hundred votes or anything like that. We're talking about accommodating people's genuine needs so that public service is something that's possible for them. And I find it extremely frustrating and disappointing that so many councillors and the mayor of Lakeshore don't see it that way.
It's because those idiots have been there forever. I mean, even that lady, she's been there 29 years. Ward Bain's been there since I was three, so I'm like 97 years old. You know, those people, it's an embarrassment that they even have any control over our community anymore, because obviously they're so out of touch with reality now that they're completely irrelevant. Just quit, please. Everybody just quit.
Well, so not only does Don hate Eagles, but he also hates Lakeshore.
I find the comment from Councillor McKinley to be just so damn condescending. Was she trying to throw shade, like just to like really rub the point home? But like, if it's important enough to you, it's like that's spoken from such a position of like, listen here, you clearly, you haven't decided to put your all into this, okay? Mm. So you're not going to be cut out to be an elected official.
You care about
it's
your
just
children.
Like, you're an idiot.
If you really want to escape the bear trap, you will gnaw your leg off.
That's exactly. Right. Listen.
Well, and to speak to specifically Councillor Sherry Bondi, this is somebody who, by all accounts, and whether you agree with everything she's done as a representative or not, this is somebody who works very hard at being a councillor. And I think she doesn't do some of the things in the exact same way that I was talking about with respect to Eric Kuzmierczyk, or Councillor Kuzmierczyk, but she is very engaged with the people that she represents.
She takes her job seriously. She's involved in the politics. She's involved in being a representative and engaged in all of those levels. And the fact that she really wants to go to some of these conferences to be mm-hmm. able to do the professional development piece is unable to because she has a young family. Like people forget of what that was like if it was that long ago.
If she's serious, she would give her kids up for adoption. Yeah, obviously, that's the only way to do it.
Is that really what it comes to? So I know we're wrapping up. We've made all the points. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been lots of fun. I knew that would be a fun story. It was worth going a little bit overtime.
So if you got anything from tonight's show, it's kill eagles and hate your children.
And send the eagle meat to Rose City Politics.
That's right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Rose City Politics. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. Just search for Rose City Politics. On Twitter, at RCP Windsor. Or visit us at rosecitypolitics.ca. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber to help support production costs. You'll find the link on the homepage of Rose City Politics. Until next week.